Mitzvah Reish Lamed Dalet 244 Shelo Lechabed Gadol Badin, that one should not honor a greater person when it comes to a court case. Shelo Yechabed Hadayin Echad Mibali Hadin B'Shasariv, so that the judges should not honor any one of the litigants more than the other when they're fighting in front of them. Afilu Haya Gadol V'Nichbad V'Nisso Panim, so this person might be great and honorable. You know, it might be one person might be the street cleaner, the other person might be the shul president. And nevertheless, you're not allowed to honor the shul president in such a case. Shenemar velo sedar penei gadol, you should not deal honorably with the presence of a big person. V'amru b'sifra, it says in the halachic medrash on sefer Vayikra, shelo tomar osher huze ben gedolim hu heach avayshenu. This is a very rich person, you know, the scion of a very important family in the community. So how can I rule against him? That would be an embarrassment to the whole family, to the status of this person. No, you have to rule in accordance with the law, as if the two litigants were absolutely equal. Kilomar shelo yechabed oso yosir baldino she'eno gadol kamohu, that you shouldn't honor him, or even not just in terms of the ruling, but in any, because even in any point in the court procedures, that treating the litigants differently could make some issue in the process of judgment or in the eventual issuance of the rulings. Therefore, in any part of the court procedure, you're not allowed to honor one more than the other. So even though the other litigant is not as great, you nevertheless, you treat them completely equally. Shlachach ne'amar v'lo sedar p'nei gadol, that's why the pasuk says you shouldn't do this. Shorish ha-mitzvah yadua, the reasoning is known, uchsavte berush ha-seder mitzvah sa-sevav. I already wrote in there, so do we see this yet? In the beginning of... No, because in our editions of the Sefer Chinuch, this is actually the next mitzvah. So we're going to go back in time a little bit, because this is the mitzvahs lo sase, which were written in the original order of the Sefer Chinuch, all at the end of each parsha, all the mitzvahs lo sase together. The mitzvahs sase's were all together at the beginning. So that's why, in the original order, then what we have is the next mitzvah actually came way before this mitzvah. So that's why he says, look way back and find out the reasoning, but we haven't gotten the... But in our order, we haven't gotten it yet, but we'll get there soon. Nidine ha-mitzvah, ma-shamer zichonim livracha, what the sages tell us, shelo yehei echad yoshev echad omed, that you shouldn't say, oh, please, Mr. Great Rich Person, please sit down during the procedure, and then the person whom he's litigating with is, not so great. You can stand. Not to do that. Ella shnehem omdim. Rather, both the litigants are supposed to stand. The reason that the litigants are supposed to stand is because the Bezdin is referred to in the Torah as Elohim, which is the secular usage of the word Elohim, not talking about God, but it indicates majesty, it indicates power, it indicates strength. So since the same word, in a sense, is used for the court and is used for God, so you have to act in the presence of the court as if you were in the presence of God. Because we hope that the judges of Israel are divinely inspired. The God is standing in the congregation of the God, which is interpreted to mean that it's talking about courts. That if the Bezdin decides that it'd be better for the procedure, see, it's going to be a very long case and people can't stand for such a long time, then you're allowed to tell both litigants to sit, but not one of them. That's while the deliberations are happening. But when the Bezdin delivers its verdict, so then it's absolutely required that the parties stand. So it says that it's derived from the verse that says that the whole nation was standing by Moshe.
Chairs by Moshe.
That could be, but...
You're rocks, yeah.
This is not what we call... an absolute deraisa proof is what we call more of an asmachta. That Chazal wanted to establish a law anyway, so in order to help you remember, in order to give it some sort of rooting in the Tanakh, so then they use the pasuk as a peg, just to that suggests what they're saying, but it doesn't mean that they're actually deriving it as a biblical law. Ela shenagu b'chol batei dinei Yisrael me'achar Talmud lo shiva mipnei ha-machlokes. So even though it's really not right, the current minag in the rabbinical courts is that the litigants are allowed to sit the whole time. Because people are going to get upset, there's going to be fights, it's not good, just let everybody sit all the time. Even the witnesses, really, al pidin, witnesses are supposed to stand. The amdu shnei hanashim, that the two people should stand. Nagu gam kein hayom lahoshiv, that they're, while the witnesses are testifying, then they're also allowed to sit in civil cases. But when witnesses are really, really required, then they do stand, like when a get is given. So when the two witnesses stand to witness the delivery of the get. As just one example. The question is, Chaschinuch discusses that obviously these dinim are only lechatchila. That the halacha is that when you're supposed to stand, when you're supposed to sit for the court procedures are only ideal. But if you didn't follow them, so it's okay b'di'evit, and that's why we have a right to be lax on them in certain situations. So he says, but maybe this only applies to civil cases, whereas we pointed out before, the civil cases are more subject to the judgment of the litigants and of the bezdin, of their preferences to a certain extent. But when you need a real, real bezdin, like we says for capital cases,
for gittin or something like that, or that could be
that's only relevant. There's no verdict over there.
Oh, okay, right.
Gittin is just the husband and wife, right? So the witnesses, that I would say, the witnesses do stand, but the bezdin that's present is not, strictly speaking, according to the vast majority of sheet, there's a requirement that a bezdin be present while the get is being given. But we try as a chumrah, whatever, a lot of times to give the get is in the presence of a bezdin. So in addition to the witnesses, so then you have the three of them sit. Mm-hmm. But that's the bezdin sits. That has nothing to do with we're talking about now the litigants. Mm-hmm. So he says. It seems that from most sources that in all cases is only a din lechatchila, and even in a capital case that all these dinim are not absolutely leikuva. They don't invalidate the proceedings of the capital cases. They're just things to stick to lechatchila. We would be less quick to be lax on them, but if you didn't adhere to them, then it would still be okay b'di'evit. The Yeser Prateha, the rest of the details are found. Oh, so wait a second. So nowadays we have everybody said. The Yeser Prateha, the rest of the details in Makomos mi Sanhedrin u Shavuos, found in various places in Sanhedrin and in Shavuos. So that gives Bechol Makom Bechol Zman, Bizcharim, like we said in the last mitzvah, not to pervert justice. It's only applicable to males because only men are allowed to be judges, kilohem ha-mishpat, because the judgment is their responsibility. But we pointed out last time that if there is a woman who's judging in any capacity, then she's also bound by this, and she would have to make sure that the way she's judging the litigants would be in a manner consistent with this, not honoring one more than the other. I didn't mention last time that the Minchas Chinuch points out that it's not only that Sefer Chinuch left out not only women, which are applicable to this mitzvah in certain circumstances, but also goyim, b'nei noach, that one of the sheva mitzvahs b'nei noach is to establish just court systems. So part of the procedure, while you don't have to adhere to all these details of the Jewish laws, like who has to stand and who has to sit and all these things, but in order to make sure the proceedings are fair, and not to honor one litigant more than the other, as we're discussing over here, so b'nei noach, so non-Jews are also bound by this rule as well. It's not, he seemed to leave those out as well. To have an official female judge, it's not recorded. But like I said, there are many. There could be many instances, even nowadays, of a woman judge if the parties accept. It's if it's just a civil case, and the parties accept her judgment upon them, then a woman is allowed to be a judge. And on purpose, you honored one litigant more than the other. And you violated a positive commandment. You should judge your friend with righteousness. We discussed that in the next mitzvah, that sometimes you're allowed to have minor honor, you're allowed to, in a minor way, honor a Talmud Chacham more than an Am Haaretz. That's what we'll discuss next one. Im Ktsas Shar Dinei HaMitzvah, again, with greater detail, Kasuv Lamala Brosh Hazeder Mitzvah Seivav, which is written above in the Mitzvah Seivav, which again, in our editions, is going to be the very next mitzvah. So you, instead of being a recap, he's now putting you in suspense to know all the, to eagerly await all the greater details of this mitzvah when we get to the next one, which we will right now. Mitzvah Reish Lamed Hey. Mitzvah 235. Mitzvah Shofei Chishbot Vetzedek. The positive commandment that a judge should judge fairly with righteousness. Lishbot Vetzedek. To judge righteously. Shenemar Vetzedek Tishbot Dami Secha. You should judge your friend righteously. Uva Perush and Stavu Adayonin Lahashvos Bale Hariv. That the judges are commanded to make the litigants as equivalent as possible. You shouldn't honor one more than the other. That the halachic medrash on Sefer Vayikra says, let's say one person, one litigant, is collected, he has all his thoughts together already, he made notes, he goes and makes a concise, clear presentation in front of the judges, and one of the litigants is just going on and on and on and on forever, that he can't seem to get his thoughts together. And he's trying to make his point. He's not talking about blueberries, but he's, you know, trying to, he's just a long-winded type of person. So in that case, you, even though it's hard, the Beis Din can't say, you can't act as if the person that they enjoy hearing from, there, you know, he gets to speak as long as he wants, and they're listening patiently. And for the next one, who's you know, going on and on and on, they can't be, you know, tapping their watches and, you know, looking at each other like, what's this guy doing? V'chein v'pere, you have to let everyone talk as much as they want, which is a big problem in Beis Din. That you could tell both katzar dvarecha, you could tell both of them, you know, you have 20 minutes to make your case. Though we don't normally do that. There, these things, you know, there was I think Rav Schechter was on this Beis Din. So there they had Toanim, which are the bad guys, which I was telling you about last time. The rabbinical type lawyers that try to make the case on behalf of their clients. So they had Toanim, I think it was Rebelski and Rashechter and someone else were the Beis Din. And the Beis Din, the thing went for, I think, 100 sessions or more. It's a waste of time for these great rabbis to do this to them. It's besides the whole problem with the institution of the Toanim in general. In any event, they couldn't just tell them to keep telling them to be quiet, and, you know, so...
Wait a second, I thought that one of the problems with the Toanim is that, aren't they supposed to hear directly from the... You mentioned this, right? They're supposed to hear directly from the witness, the litigant.
Yes.
They're supposed to be able to look at the litigant in the eye, listen to, you know, I mean, and to be able to judge whether they're telling the truth or not.
I mean, I don't...
How can you have a Toanim at all in that case?
That's a very good question. That's a problem. It's a problem. I'm not sure. It could be that they have the litigant on the stand, so to speak, a little bit, and then the Toanim go on and have all the halachic arguments. Could be that's what they do, but... Yeah, the whole point is that the Beis Din has to discover, based on their interactions with the litigant, who's telling the truth. The point that the litigants are not supposed to really make the halachic arguments, per se. The Beis Din just is supposed to establish the facts. Though apparently, there was a famous story about this case, so he said that Rav Schechter later was saying how Toanim are no good because they didn't understand the subtleties of what the Dayanim were saying. So it's apparently at one point, so the Toanim came up with some convoluted halachic argument in favor of his client, so apparently Rav Schechter said, Mr. Toen, you're a genius, like in a sarcastic way. So apparently, as Rav Schechter said, that later on, the Toen was going around to all his friends and trying to drum up more business by saying, Rav Schechter said that I'm a genius. You should hire me as a Toen. Okay. V'chein v'perik.
Can a woman be a Toen?
Yeah, they have an Israel woman Toenim. Yeah. A Toen doesn't have any halachic function. A Toen is just... make your arguments in front of the Beis Din. If a woman knows Choshen Mishpat, she can be a Toen. There was a whole controversy in Israel, it's not Al-Pi Halacha, because there's no such thing as a Toen in Halacha. It's just a new thing that's been invented recently, but it's whether a Beis Din was going to, just as terms of policy, to allow a woman to be a Toen, it didn't seem so nice that the whole huge rabbis and the woman's going to make the argument. There was a discussion about this in Israel, but like I said, there's no reason that a woman can't be a Toanim.
Mm-hmm. Is Mishnah America allowed Toanim?
Mishnah America does not allow Toanim. They allow lawyers.
Oh, okay.
because it's easier, because it if you, Beis Din allows lawyers in the proceeding, so it makes it harder for the secular court to overturn the ruling of the Beis Din, because they see that the Beis Din had what the secular is more proper procedure. V'chein v'perek shvus ha'edus, it says in Masechah Shvus Tana Rabbanan b'tzedek tishpot amisecha shelo yehechad omed v'echad yoshev. When not one person shouldn't stand, one person shouldn't sit. Echad medaber kol tzorcho v'echad omer l'katzid v'echad. One person, you say, gets to talk as much as they want. The other one, the Beis Din says, keep it short, please. V'chein b'chal mitzvah zo shekol ish shehu chacham b'dini ha'torah v'yashar b'drachav, that included in this mitzvah of judging your friend with the righteousness, that someone who's a chacham, who's really well versed in the laws and very honest, shumitzuve sheyodin din Torah bein bali harivim yesh koach b'yodo, that he should act as a dayan when appropriate. Again, we saw in the two mitzvahs ago that really someone should demur from being a dayan. That if you refrain from serving as a dayan, so you get rid of all sorts of problems from yourself. You don't have shvuas taken on your account, and if you make a mistake, you might have gezel, you might be stealing one from one person. So it says better you shouldn't serve as a dayan at all. But here it says if you're the one who's available, and otherwise they might go to someone else who's not as qualified. So then of course you have to step up and you have to serve as a dayan. V'afilu yochid yochol lodun midin Torah. That on a Torah level, then, in terms of civil cases, obviously, whereas in other cases, you really need three, like for gerus, things like that. So for civil cases, one person could judge the case. That's what they do even in the Beis Din of America, even though, again, we'll see in a second that it's not ideal, that so in order to save people money, because you have to pay for the time of the dayanim, and you're not allowed to, a dayan is not allowed to accept money for serving as a dayan per se, but especially nowadays where people have to devote a lot more time to being dayanim. Remember, in the olden days, they were paid by the community. There were, you know, they were the rabbis and the dayanim and the people. Maybe it was a part-time job. Maybe the other thing. Maybe other sources of parnasa. Whatever it was, they were communal figures who served as dayanim. Nowadays, we don't have that. People who otherwise have other employment opportunities and jobs have to serve as dayanim. Or if they're going to be a full-time dayan, they have no choice but to take money for that. But you only have to give what's called schar batala, meaning they have to be paid by both litigants equally. Obviously, pay by one more than the other. That you're obviously going to be biased to that side of the story. But both litigants have to contribute to the fees equally, and it can't be an exorbitant fee. It has to be just the amount of money that they are losing by not taking another job, as opposed to a normal job that they'd be qualified for. Again, it's not set in stone the exact amount of money, but it has to be a reasonable amount of, it can't be an excessive amount of money. So it saves money, and people have a small case, so, you know, if they would have to pay three dayanim, you know, they would just be an exorbitant fee. So a lot of times, if it's a small case, it's just going to require a small hearing of, an hour or less than an hour, I don't know. So a small hearing, so a lot of times the Beis Din of America will just arrange a dayan yochid, that just one person will be the dayan, because it's not such, so the stakes are not so big. K'mo she'amru zichrono livracha, that our sages say, echad don es chaveru din Torah, she'ne'amar b'tzedek tishpot amisecha. It says, you, talking in the singular, thou shalt judge your friend with righteousness. But the sages said that really it's not proper for one person to judge by himself, and you should have a Beis Din of three. There's a whole machlokis in the Gemara, machlokis Rishonim had a paskin, whether two people is okay as a Beis Din b'dieved. Normally we're not supposed to have what's called a Beis Din shakol. You can't have an even number of people on a Beis Din, because if you take a vote, you could come to a 50-50 split. You have to be able to have a majority. The question is, b'dieved, will two people be able to constitute as a Beis Din? But for sure, one is good, and for sure, three is good. So one is good, but you're not supposed to do. If the question is, if maybe what you're allowed to do one lechatchila, the two people accept the one upon him. It's only the only problem with one person judging is if he really acts as a Beis Din, and he's the one in the city, and everybody is subject to his authority. So maybe that's the problem. But really, you should try to have more people on a Beis Din. In fact, the halacha says that the more the merrier on a Beis Din. You might think that's crazy, you know, when then your deliberations are going to take hours and hours and hours, that everybody has to state their thoughts on the case, and then they have to take a vote. It's going to take forever. So that's normally what we assume in halacha is that the more people on the Bezdin, the better, because the more, then, the, you know, if possibly one of those people will see the truth, the other people didn't see the truth, and the one person will be able to explain, the other person will say, the other people in the Bezdin will say, yeah, this one person is taka right. So the more people you have, the more likely you're going to have people who actually see the truth of the case. So according to the, so it's just interesting, because you have problems, you see, like right now, you know, Lahavdil, the Supreme Court of the United States is a Bezdin Shokel. Mm-hmm. Only 8 people on the Supreme Court, and it caused problems. Sometimes you have non-binding, you know, decisions that don't really accomplish that much. They don't set precedent. There are issues involved. I mean, that's an American law, but you see, I'm just saying that comparatively, you see that that Bezdin Shokel can indeed be a problem. Ve'od yesh bichlal mitzvah zo. This is very interesting. That included in this mitzvah of judging your friend with righteousness is something that has nothing to do with the court system at all. And that's something that people, a term that people throw around all the time. That judging people righteously is not just in court, but when you see someone doing something that could be interpreted in more than one way, it could be that he's doing something bad, it could be that he's doing something neutral or good. So you should try it, you should be done lechaf zchus. And you should assume that the person is doing it for that is not doing the bad thing and is doing something that's good. You shouldn't interpret someone else's actions in a bad way. You should always try to interpret it in a good way. There's a famous story that Shlomo Zalman and a student of his were walking along the street in Yerushalayim, and they saw the highway. And it was on Shabbos, and they saw a lot of cars going. So the student said to Shlomo Zalman, said, wow, like, Nebuch, I hope the hospitals can accommodate all these seriously ill people who are driving to the hospital on Shabbos. So Shlomo Zalman responded, there's an obligation to be dan l'chav schus, there's not an obligation to be stupid. That, you know, if there is any, it's when it's totally unreasonable, you don't have to be dan l'chav schus, but if there's any way to reasonably assume that the person is going to be, is doing it for good, or in a permissible way, then you should do that. The Gemara in Shabbos, the Kuf Chav Zayin, says that it tells a few stories about how far people went to judge others lechav zchus, which telling you that it's true that there's no obligation to be stupid when there's something that's so unreasonable, but even if there's a remote chance, but an actual chance that the person is doing something for good, so then it's okay. So one of the stories given in the Gemara over there is that a certain rabbi and his students went to save a Jewish girl who had just been taken captive. And when they were staying overnight, they would travel to this place where this girl was taken captive, and they stayed overnight at the inn. They were all, I don't know, in the room together, I guess, so it shouldn't be yichud, whatever it is. So basically, the rabbi insisted that the girl sleep by his feet on the bed. Not sleep, I mean, I don't know if they have beds, but they whatever, just by, she should sleep right below him. And then the next morning, the rabbi, first thing in the morning, he got up and he went to the mikveh. So he said to his students, so obviously this didn't look so good, because he insisted that the girl be right by him. And then, you know, at that time, either the Takanas Ezer was still in force, or he was makbid on it anyway, even though it wasn't in force, which is that after a seminal emission, a man has to go to the mikveh before davening. So he went, so it didn't look so good. He insisted that she sleep right by him. The next morning, he did something that indicated he had a seminal emission the previous night. So what exactly was he doing with that girl? So he asked his students, you know, when I insisted that the girl sleep right below me, what did you think? So his students said, we figured that, you know, there are a lot of students here. There's one of whom that, you know, you're not so sure about his righteousness. So you insisted that the girl sleep close to you in order to keep her safe. And he said, and when I went to the mikveh in the morning, what did you think? He asked the students, and the students responded, we figured that because we've been traveling a lot and things are out of sorts, so maybe because of the travel, you had a nocturnal emission. So the rabbi said, you're 100% right, and he gave them a bracha, that just as you judge me l'chav zchus, so too God should judge you l'chav zchus. So something like that, even though you know, those these students were very righteous, so they didn't think that they knew the rabbi, and they knew that he wouldn't do what they thought. What an observer reading the story before you get to the end thinks, ooh, that looks suspicious. But the point is that you really have to try to judge people. Lachavslos. There's another story in the Gemara about somebody who couldn't repay a debt, and he kept giving excuses. And there's somebody, and the person to whom he owed the money, he asked, eventually he repaid it. But he says, well, I kept giving the excuses, what did you think? And they go after one excuse after the other. It was far-fetched, things that seemed to be far-fetched. And like, maybe you lent out all your money, blah, 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 you didn't have enough to pay me back. So then the same thing, that the person who owed the money said, you're 100% correct in all your things, so just as you judge me, l'chavslos, so God judges you, l'chavslos. The third case is that another rabbi went to Rome, and he needed to speak with a certain woman who was very close with the government. So he went into her house and shut the door. And then when he came out, he went to the mikveh. So his students, so he asked the other people who were there, what did you think happened? He said, maybe you needed to shut the door because this woman is close to the government and you're discussing internal government matters and you couldn't risk the top secrecy being compromised. And said, and when I went to the mikveh, what did you think? Said, because, you're makbid, and it was still in the days when people are makbid on Tumah and Tahara, and they were gozer on all non-Jews, that even though on a Doraisa level, a non-Jew is not subject to Tumah and Tahara at all, to ritual purity and impurity. But Midrabban, in order to create more distance between Jews and non-Jews, they declared that all non-Jews should have the Tumah of equivalent to a Zav, or a Zava, somebody who has abnormal emissions. So they said, well, maybe you went to the mikveh because this woman, you're talking to this woman, and she had some of her spit, which is tummy because of the ziva, because she's midrabban like azav, you fell on you, and you had to go to the mikveh because you actually became tummy. 100% same thing. Gave them a bracha since you judge me lechavslos. So too may God judge you lechavslos. But these stories are basically just meant to illustrate how far you have to go in order to consider that in order to be judged someone lechavslos. This is again totally unreasonable. These seem unreasonable, but if it's, on a mass scale, like Rosh Hashanah and a student on Shabbos, then you don't have to. But ordinarily, you really have to go, far in order to judge people at Chavskos. Shoresh ha-mitzvah niglahu. The reasoning of the mitzvah is obvious. Ki v'hashvayas adin yisyashiv ha-olam. That when you make people equivalent in judgment, so therefore, then the world will be better established. If the people see, one of the litigants sees that the other litigant is being so obviously favored, so he's going to be all nervous and he's not going to be able to formulate his arguments properly. So there the judgment will be perverted and twisted. So somebody who's wise and honest should be serve as a judge. It's also part of the mitzvah. Gam bezeh toelis. There's also a positive value involved in this. So somebody who's wise and honest is going to bring forth a true judgment. He's going to go to a different court. That If the one who's really qualified is not gonna judge them, v'yatu adina ha'echad mibli yedia. So they're gonna make the judgment in favor of someone, one of the litigants, unjustly, without even knowing any better necessarily. So you have to make sure that the most qualified person is a dayan. That's what we were saying last time, that like Rav Shechter asked Rebelsky, so why do you allow to'anim in your bezin? Just make a policy that no to'anim, and you'd be much better off. So Rebelsky said, because people want to'anim nowadays, for better or for worse, mostly for worse. So then, why rather they come to me because I'm more honest than the other Bati Din. So better I should judge them than other people. It didn't mean all the other Bati Din. It meant many of the other Bati Din that they might have chosen from. I'm more honest. Yeah. Gam b'mashe amarnu shekol adam chayv ladun chaver lechavschus shubichal mitzvah. So like we're talking about judging people favorably just in general daily interactions. So people are going to be at peace and they're going to be brotherly and friendly, which might not be the case. They're constantly suspecting others of wrongdoing. But So the whole, all these different facets of the mitzvah are designed to make sure that people have a proper society with a straight judgment. To give peace between them and to remove suspicion between different people. So one person comes to the Beis Din, he happens to be better off, and he's wearing an Armani suit with over $1,000 suit, and he's wearing the fanciest ties and whatever, and somebody else comes in and he's wearing his garments are frayed, and his glasses have tape in the middle, and he doesn't look so good. He doesn't look as well dressed. So omrim lamechubad. So it can get expensive to get into a court case like this. So you say to the person who's dressed better, hal bishehu kemosach o levash kemoso v'achar kach nadin beinehem. We can't do this. If we see someone who's so snazzy and one person who's so poorly dressed, so the Beis Din is going to even subconsciously favor the person who's better dressed. So we say to the litigants, to the richer one, I mean, he's not necessarily richer, but appears to be richer, say, you have two choices. Either you pay for for an Armani suit for this other guy, custom tailored, whatever, the fancy things, so he looks just like you, or you go put on frayed garments and glasses with tape in the middle, just so you look equivalent. You have two choices.
Does this extend also to excluding, let's say, rules of evidence? For example, in a secular system, if somebody brings up a point which is really not relevant, but which might be prejudicial, that gets excluded.
What do you mean, like what?
You're not allowed, for example, to talk about a defendant's prior criminal history. In this case, for example, if one of the litigants happened to throw in and says, "Well, as I said, my good friend, the Rosh Yeshiva, and they started trying to get around all these things by expressing to the Dayanim, in fact, how much better learned and how much a better person he is than the other guy." Is it proper for the Dayanim? Could they say?
It would be subject to each individual case. The Beis Din would have to say if they felt it was totally irrelevant and the guy was just trying to puff himself up, then they would probably say, "Please don't mention that again," or something like that. Mm-hmm. But they wouldn't say if they felt that there were real character differences over here, that one person had a much better history of fitting in better society and proper behavior, then they would probably admit that as evidence. But it really is there's no total basic rule, klal gorif, as we say in Hebrew, like a general rule. Just be dependent on how the Beis Din perceives the situation at the time. Kedesh yushavin, so that they should be addressed equally. V'achshav bizmanenu lo reinu Beis Din she'asakein. Even though this is the halacha on the books, again, like we just were talking about before, the sitting and the standing, that the Beis Din has a different practice nowadays than what's technically on the books. So this, we never saw a Beis Din that insisted that someone else pay for someone else's dress, that they should get, they should be dressed better in order to appear better. And the reason for this is there are two reasons. One is that some of the commentaries just say, it's an expression that some of the poskim use when relevant to the sitting and the standing. Also, that nowadays ein lanu koach lahamid mishpatei hadas al tilam. Nowadays we just don't have the power to make the religion exactly the way it's supposed to be because of the poor situation in which we find ourselves. That's one explanation. Another explanation is that it's only talking about when one person is wearing, really horrible clothes that look terrible, and one person is wearing really fancy clothes that look, amazing. One person, has a $100 suit, one person has a $500 suit. They look more or less the same if they're not, ripping. So then you don't have to be so concerned about this. Another explanation, which is, no hearsay is given by the Bach, is that you just tell the litigants, we recognize that you have differences in dress, but don't worry, we're not going to take it into consideration when administering the verdict. So just basically the idea is to calm the litigants, is that he shouldn't be nervous that the other guy looks so much better, so he's not going to be able to formulate his arguments properly. So the Beis Din just reassures him that everything is going to be okay. Then he'll be able to formulate his arguments properly.
So the basic assumption is that it's just like, for example, I guess when you have a court case that's heard by a judge as opposed to a jury.
Yeah.
That a judge, or Dayan was, is capable of you know, ignoring attempts to influence him. That and so that you can leave it up to his judgment to say he can deal with.
Right.
Say prejudicial statements and things of the sort,
Right, that's true. But it's also not, this halacha, like we said, is not just vis-a-vis the judge in terms of litigants, between litigants themselves, that right. the seeing that they're, that they're treated differently is going to make them nervous. Anyway, this is not the minhag, you've never seen this, that you make the litigants stress differently. Ve'od amru zichron levracha, the sages tell us, shemitzvah lo shivam b'shaveh, that you should sit them down equivalently. Ve'lo ha'echad l'malo mechavero, ha'echad b'shiva v'acher b'amida. You shouldn't sit one in a throne and another person on a little stool. You should have equivalent seats if they're sitting down, or one sitting and one standing. Rak b'tam l'chacham v'am aretz sh'amru v'hem. There is certain situations where it just wouldn't be appropriate to treat an Am Haaretz, someone who's very unlearned, and a Tam B'Chacham, someone who is learned differently. The same. You have to treat them slightly differently. So Moshiv and Achacham, you actively, help the Tam B'Chacham sit down in front of the Beis Din, the Omrim L'Am Haaretz shave. And you tell the Am Haaretz, you said, okay, you can sit down now. So it's not... But sometimes the Am Haaretz maybe is not such an Am Haaretz, maybe he has a good respect for the Tam B'Chacham. The times of, when we're talking about the times of the Mishnah, so there was active animosity between the Amei Haaretz and the Tamidei Chachamim. So the Amei Haaretz wasn't that they weren't religious, they observed halacha, but they were a higher class, basically. The Amei Chachamim, the sages who were actually studying the Torah Sheba'al Peh, thought of themselves as a different social class. You can read, there's a book called, I think the Rabbinic Class in, Roman, late antique Roman Palestine, something like that, by Lee Levine, which we used in one of our classes in college. But it's a book about the societal differences between these different classes in the times of Mishnah. So it was active animosity. It's like Rabbi Akiva said that before he started learning, when he was in Amaret, so he said, not that he wasn't religious, he observed the Torah, but he said that, I wish someone would bring me a Talmid Chacham that I could bite him like a donkey. They said they didn't have good feelings with them. But this is not what we're talking about. When we say Amoritz nowadays, we mean, could mean somebody who respects the rabbis and, is willing to listen to them, but just is not very learned. So here, the Amoritz might not want to sit down in the presence of the Talmud Chacham. And so if he doesn't, so we're not makbid on him. But the Beis Din still has to judge them fairly. They can't favor the Talmud Chacham just because he's a Talmud Chacham. The sages tell us, she'im bo'u lefanecha har beidinim, that let's say there's a whole docket, that the day is full of court cases from the Beis Din, v'yesh b'neihem din yosom ve'almana, and one of the people, normally it's first come, first serve. But if there's someone on the docket who's a orphan or a widow, she'mitzvah lahakdiman, so they come first. Shneamar, the pasuk in Yeshayahu says, "Shiftu yasom rivu almana," that we have a special mandate to judge cases of the orphan and the widow. Kilomar shebedinam nitztavinu lezares yoser mi bedin acherim, that we're supposed to get ourselves, to do it more for an orphan and widow more than for other people. V'chein amru zichronam levracha shedin tam lechacham kodem ledin am haaretz. So if a tam lechacham is involved in one of the cases, you take him first because he has to go back to his learning. So he shouldn't be sitting around in the waiting room of the court all day long. He should go back to his learning. So he comes before am haaretz. V'din isha kodem ledin ish. That a court case involving a woman comes before a court case that's just involving men. Why? Lefisha boshes ha'isha maruba, that a woman is more uncomfortable sitting around in the waiting room of the Beis Din. She doesn't want to be the focus of the attention in the waiting room. She wants to get it over with. The whole idea of going to a Beis Din and appearing in public and making statements and all these things, she much prefer to sit at home and knit. So therefore, a woman is more embarrassed at the whole process of going to court, so therefore it's more uncomfortable for her, so therefore she comes before a woman. The points... I'm saying before a man. So she... So Minchas Chinuch points out that this doesn't apply, this doesn't trump the Talmud Chacham. The Talmud Chacham still comes before a woman. The woman just comes before a regular man. So what if it's a woman who's a Talmidat Chachamim? Mm-hmm. It's not the form of a Talmud Chacham for a woman is not a Talmidat Chachama. It's any woman who tells you that she's a Talmidat Chachama is not, because that's incorrect. Because Talmud Chacham doesn't mean a wise student.
Yeah.
It means a student of a sage,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Student of a wise person. So therefore, it's expressed a lot of times. The original formulation is found in the old manuscripts and is used by the Rambam, is Talmid Chachamim. Talmid Chachamim is obviously, so it doesn't agree, so it doesn't give the impression of being an adjective noun pair. It's obviously a smichut pair of genitive construction, as we'd say. So that means a student of the sages. Student of sages. So therefore, the female version of a Talmid Chacham is a Talmidat Chacham, a female student of a sage, or a Talmidat Chachama, she's a student of a woman sage, or a Talmidat Chachamim, student of a female student of the sages. All of these are correct. However, Talmidat Chachama is not correct. So that's why if you go to a certain institutions that claim to be training Talmidot Chachamot, the Talmidot Chachamot could technically be correct in the plural, because that could also mean female students of female sages. Whatever it is, if a woman tells you she's a Talmida Chachama, that just means wise student. That's not what Talmid Chacham means. Not what a Talmid. That's not what a woman version should be either. The Chol Zeh. Oh, so if it's a woman Talmid Chacham, so presumably she'd come before a male Talmid Chacham, unless you say that the reason is that a man needs to go back to his learning because he's chayiv in Talmud Torah, and a woman is her Talmud Torah is voluntary. She could be maybe greater in scholarship than the man, but Lamaisa, she's voluntary and he has to learn all the time. So maybe you could argue that. Minchas Chinuch doesn't discuss this case because in his time, Talmidat Chachamim was perhaps much rarer. You have certain instances of those in history. But he says, the Minchas Chinuch points out, that a widow does come before even a Talmid Chacham, because there you have an explicit pasuk in Sefer Yeshayahu that says that there's a special inyan to judge them first. The Chol Zeh Shamarnu, all this is in the realm of Bichlal B'Tzedek Tishpotu, that you should judge with righteousness. V'inyonim Eilu Im Yaser Pratei HaMitzvah, B'Mekomos Mefuzarim B'Talmud. And all these things, with the rest of the details of the mitzvah, are in places all throughout the Talmud. U'mehen Harbei B'Sanhedrin Shavuos, found mainly in Masecha Sanhedrin, Masecha Shavuos. B'Noheges B'Mitzvah Zo B'Chol Makom V'Chol Zman B'Zcharim. This is applicable in all places and all times to males. They're required to judge, and not the females. But he said in a situation where a woman or a non-Jew is judging, non-Jews have to judge in many situations. A woman never is required to judge. But in the situations where they're judging, so this is applicable to them as well. But there is something, the women even have to, even though you don't take the mitzvah, since the main part of the mitzvah is not relevant to women in general, so women are totally exempt from everything mentioned. No, whatever is relevant to women is relevant. Whatever is not relevant to women is relevant. We point out that part of this mitzvah is that Sefer Chinuch, Shubichal mitzvah zovu ladu nachaver lechavslus. That part of this mitzvah is to judge our friends favorably just in regular interactions and in daily life. And of course, that has nothing, there's no difference there between men and women, so therefore women are just as chayiv in that as men.